Hello, you're listening to the Lowell Association for the Blind Radio Reading. Lowell Association for the Blind Radio is a member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. It's your main source of accessible community news and information. We're located in Lowell, Massachusetts. We read local news, editorials, feature stories, and more. Lowell Association for the Blind Radio is brought to you by volunteers and staff of the Lowell Association for the Blind. This is Leslie. I'll be reading to you today from the Tewksbury Town Crier. Lowell Association for the Blind would like to thank the Nancy and Richard Donahue Charitable Foundation for their support. We're told on the front page, Mulligan named superintendent as sole candidate. The article is by Rosalind Impink in Tewksbury. The Tewksbury School Committee held its superintendent interview with Assistant Superintendent Nancy Mulligan as the sole internal candidate. The only finalist under consideration as Superintendent Brenda Therio-Wiegand retires at the end of this school year. Mulligan was hired as Assistant Superintendent in 2024. Her prior experience includes serving as Assistant Superintendent in Windham, New Hampshire, and earlier as Assistant Superintendent for the Northern Middlesex Regional School District, which serves Ashby, Pepperell, and Townsend. The only internal candidate, Mulligan emphasized the advantage of having already built relationships with students, staff, and community stakeholders. "I have been listening," she said, "not that her approach has been shaped in part by Therio-Wiegand's leadership and the district strategic plan, which she called purposeful and data-driven." Throughout her interview, Mulligan returned repeatedly to themes of equity, collaboration, and transparency. "Educational equality is not achieved through good intentions," she said. "It is achieved through coherent systems, evidence-based practices, and the courage to look honestly at our own data. My work across curriculum, instruction, assessments, special education, professional development, emergency management, labor relations, and fiscal stewardship has prepared me for the full scope of what this role demands." Mulligan highlighted several initiatives she has helped advance, including the creation of advisory councils for staff and the implementation of the recent special education audit. The audit, Mulligan noted, described Tewksbury as a district of schools, not a school district. A finding she believes underscores the need for stronger alignment and shared expectations across buildings. Mulligan's stated priorities include strengthening the district's sense of belonging, deepening the use of data to guide decisions, improving communication, and ensuring equitable access for all students. She spoke about the importance of shifting from one-way to two-way communication, particularly in efforts to engage parents and families more meaningfully in the school experience. Budget pressures were another focus for committee members. Mulligan outlined a strategy centered on clarity, trust, and efficiency, emphasizing that rising costs require honest conversations with the community. "People can hear hard news if you haven't misled them." She pointed to opportunities for greater efficiency, such as maximizing the district's fleet, exploring regional approaches, and assessing staffing and needs through attrition while continuing to hire and retain strong educators. On facilities, Mulligan emphasized the district's ongoing safety and security assessments. She stressed the need to balance transparency with discretion. "We never want to put anything out there that might compromise the safety of our students." Mulligan described Tewksbury's strengths including dedicated staff, a supportive community, a strong administrative team, and engaged families. She also noted the need to better communicate the district's successes. "This is a good district," she said. "I do believe that we are in a very good place, but I believe we have the capacity to be great." Mulligan closed by asserting herself as the best candidate for the district's biggest job. "I believe that leadership in our public school district is a privilege, one that carries an obligation to be transparent when things are hard, to be present when people are uncertain, and to make decisions that put students first, even when that is the most difficult path." She said, "I am ready to lead this work. I am ready to earn this community's trust every single day." Following the interview, committee members praised Mulligan's responses and the experience she brings from both Tewksbury and other districts. They opted not to pursue an external search and voted to offer her the position of permanent superintendent. We're told absentee ballots are available in Tewksbury. Tewksbury Town Clerk Denise Grafeo would like to notify voters that absentee ballots are now available at the town clerk's office. The town clerk's office is open Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., Tuesday, 7:30 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Friday, 7:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. To qualify for an absentee ballot, you must be away from your city, town on election day, have a disability that keeps you from voting at your polling place, or have a religious belief that prevents you from voting at your polling place on election day. Applying for a ballot. Applications are available for download by any written request is accepted if it has your signature on it. For absentee ballots, a family member may also make the request on your behalf. Applications can be submitted by mail, email, or fax. If you are emailing your application, you may either scan or take a photo of your signed application and email it to the town clerk at tewksbury-ma.gov. Typed signatures are not acceptable. And ballot application. If you need an application mailed to you, you may contact the town clerk's office by phone, or you may email townclerk at tewksbury-ma.gov. Alternatively, you may write a letter requesting your ballot. Be sure to include your name, your address, the place you would like the ballot mailed, and your signature. Absentee ballots. Any mail-in ballot must be requested in writing. The final day to fill out the absentee ballot application and vote at the same time at the town clerk's office. And absentee ballots if you have been admitted to a healthcare facility within 1 week of the election, you may use the absentee ballot application to designate someone of your choice to deliver a ballot to you. The person you designate to deliver your ballot will need to bring the signed application to the town clerk's office, pick up your absentee ballot, bring it to you, and return it for you by the close of polls on election day. Emergency ballots may be requested up until the close of polls. Returning your ballot. Ballots may be returned by mail, in person, or in the secure ballot drop box at the main entrance to town hall, no later than 8 p.m. on election day. Absentee ballots must be returned to the town clerk's office, not to the precinct on election day. If you need further assistance, please call the town clerk's office at 978-640-4355. And we're told the planning board reviews mixed-use development planned for 1325 Main Street, which is the former home of Discount Madness. The article is by Rosalind Impink in Tewksbury. The Tewksbury Planning Board met on Monday, March 6th at Town Hall, with all members present. Town Hall planner Alex Lauder announced that the town will hold an open space and recreation plan committee forum, inviting residents to help shape priorities for future land use and conservation. Residents were also reminded to return their town census forms to ensure their voter registration remains active. Board member Jonathan Champa noted an upcoming regional discussion on homelessness in the Merrimack Valley, organized through the Northern Middlesex Council of Governments. The board endorsed an approval, not required, plan at 360 Pinnacle Street and a family suite separate special permit at Silver Star Avenue. The board held a discussion with Echo Auto owner Al Salis to address concerns over vehicle unloading practices on Main Street. Salis acknowledged that some independent contractors have not been pulling fully into the driveway when unloading vehicles, and emphasized that he is working to communicate expectations to the contractors. Board members, Board Member Vinnie Fratalia had raised concerns over trucks being parked on Main Street after receiving complaints from residents. Salis added that he has purchased the adjacent lot to help alleviate congestion through redevelopment of that property is still underway. Board member Jim Duffy urged patience, reminding colleagues that the board placed special conditions on the permit for the adjacent redevelopment property. Duffy said he contacted the police department and confirmed no complaints, citations, or accidents related to Echo's auto unloading activity. He cautioned against targeting one particular business when the practice is not uncommon along Main Street. Board members speculated that although the driveway is large enough to accommodate unloading trucks, some drivers may lack confidence maneuvering the vehicles into the space. The board reviewed a proposed mixed-use development at 1325 Main Street, the long vacant 2.1-acre parcel previously occupied by the Discount Madness retail store. Consultant Mara Cousins, representing developer Arnie Martell, reminded the board that an earlier project for the site was approved in 2018, calling for 14 townhouse units and a mixed-use building with retail and apartments. Although the former commercial building was demolished in 2020, in preparation for that plan, construction never began, leaving the property undeveloped for several years. The new proposal maintains a mixed-use vision, but shifts the layout and building types. The residential portion includes two multifamily buildings, each with seven units, 5 2-bedroom and 2 1-bedroom apartments, totaling 14 units with 2 designated as affordable. A detached garage would provide 14 enclosed parking spaces, supplemented by 23 exterior spaces. Toward the rear of the lot, the developer proposes a 8,400-square-foot commercial office building with 6 lower-level garage spaces and first-floor contractor office space. The project requires a 28 parking spaces for the commercial component, but provides 36. Cousins outlined plans for stormwater management, curb cuts, utilities, traffic flow, and low-height vegetation. Board members raised questions about fire truck turning radius, the applicants of granting setback waivers, and ensuring child safety in proposed green spaces. Abutting residents, voiced concerns about privacy, requesting fencing and additional landscaping to buffer the development from abutting homes. The board continued the discussion, and the next meeting was scheduled for the end of March. View ongoing project information online at www.tewksbury-mass.gov/530/active-planning-board-application. Here it is. The Finance Committee reviews fiscal year 27 public safety budgets. The article is by Rosalind Impink in Tewksbury. At its March 9th meeting, the Tewksbury Finance Committee reviewed a series of budget updates from town public safety departments, beginning with a sobering overview of state grants and town has lost due to the non-compliance of the MBTA Communities Act. Chair Rich Levasseur opened the session by outlining the impact a total of $1,728,000 in missed funding opportunities to date. Levasseur listed the affected grants, including a $25,000 pre-planning grant for early college courses, $200,000 for early college programming, $30,000 for digital literacy, $75,000 for a feasibility study for the Center Fire Station, $300,000 for ADA self-evaluation, $50,000 for local early stage and actionable planning program, $48,000 for Mass DCR water withdrawal mitigation and rate review, and $1 million in Mass DOT complete streets design assistance, which would have supported sidewalk planning. Levasseur emphasized the importance of residents understanding the financial consequences of the town's current status. The committee returned to discussing fiscal year 2027 budget requests, starting with the Northern Middlesex Regional Emergency Communications Center. Executive Director Brian O'Neill described a challenging year for the Regional Dispatch Center, which provides operations to Dracut and Tewksbury and is split funded between the towns. Staffing shortages have required operational adjustments aimed at reducing costs and improving morale. O'Neill said the center is working to cut overtime expenses and has temporarily eliminated a vacant deputy director position, with hopes of restoring it in the future. The center continues to pursue state reimbursement opportunities, including a 9/11 support grant and training funds. O'Neill noted that a significant amount of administrative work is currently absorbed by other town departments, an indirect cost that would require additional staff if shifted back to the NMRECC. The center's budget reflects 15% increase driven largely by reduced grant funding and rising benefit costs. Committee members asked about employee turnover. O'Neill explained that some dispatchers have left for full-time police and fire positions, a common career progression, while others departed due to dissatisfaction with prior leadership. He also highlighted efforts to revamp policies, strengthen training, improve hiring, and enhance workstations to make the job more sustainable. Town Manager John Current said he is reaching out to other communities to explore adding other towns to the regional center. Fire Chief Joe Kearns next presented the fire department budget, reporting progress on several long-term goals, including maintaining a second dedicated ambulance in service 7 days a week during daytime hours. Salaries are increasing 3.5%, reflecting step increases and a higher EMT stipend. Overtime remains flat for now. Kiernan's acknowledged it will need attention in future budgets. The department has received some state funding related to hospital transports, which account for roughly 10% of calls. Operating costs are rising 5.6%, contributing to a total budget increase of 3.72%. Kern cited higher repair and maintenance needs, though DPW has been assisting with fleet management. The department brings in about $2 million in ambulance revenues in a year. Funding has been appropriated for a study for improvements to the North Street station, including relocating sleeping quarters away from the apparatus bay. The meeting continued with a review of the police department's budget. Police Chief Ryan Columbus presented a 5.9% increase in salary costs, offset by a 1.2% decrease in operating expenses due to reductions in professional services and communications. Some equipment needs were met through grants and insurance reimbursements. Capital outlay is down 25%, resulting in a total budget increase of 4.21%, or $9.7 million. Columbus expressed concern about ongoing funding for the department's behavioral health clinic clinician, currently supported through a State Department of Mental Health grant. He also notes that the department is relatively young and is prioritizing mentorship for newer officers. The committee expects a forthcoming update from Shawshin Tech, with several financial questions already queued for discussion. Members also began preparing to discuss the upcoming town meeting warrant as budget season continues. And in Middlesex County, city officials consider plan to add more housing at Old Atlantic Gelatin site. The article is by Patrick Blaise. After city officials spent years envisioning a transformation of the 107-acre site into a vibrant employment and shopping hub with a proportional mix of housing, the largest ever private redevelopment in Woburn's history might end up with no commercial space whatsoever. At the outset of this year, representatives from Boston real estate developer Leggett McCall, which purchased the Old Atlantic Gelatin property off Montvale Avenue by the Stoneham Line and 193 back in the winter of 2018, approached the city council to ask permission to swap out a planned $1 million square foot life science campus with an age-restricted condominium development containing 504 dwelling units. The new homes to be constructed by Georgia-based Pulte Group would be clustered in 8 new 5-story buildings containing ground floor parking garages, also proposing the construction of a new pickleball and bocce courts and a pool and activity center for residents. The housing complexes would be spread out on a 33-plus acre section of the Old Fool Food manufacturing site that sits closest to the Montvale Ave Hill Street entrance to the site. Officials from Pulte Group, which would market the home ownership units strictly to persons over age 55, say the redevelopment would generate $2.6 million in net new tax revenues, fill a niche market for retirees looking to downsize to a smaller home, and blend in with a townhouse and senior living facility that has already been constructed on the massive site that stretches along I-93 to the Winchester Line. Usually, when we come into other cities and towns, it's a windfall. We feel like this is such a great fit for all of us. The petitioner, who has also agreed to slate at least 10% of 38 of those new condos towards affordable buyers, as specified under the state's Chapter 40B statute, also insists that the 55-plus development will generate significantly less traffic during peak driving times when compared to the previously permitted life science campus. Nevertheless, some local officials are less than enthused by the change, have urged Boston Corporation to be a little more imaginative in light of what had previously been slated for the property. "There's no way I'll support 504 units. It's just too much," Council President Robert Toro Jr. said of the proposed 50-plus housing complex. He later added during a gathering at City Hall last month, "I'd be a little more open to a conversation if we had some first-floor commercial space in the 8 new multi-story buildings you're proposing. That is a community in and of itself. Some retail outlets could service that area and reduce the unit cost. We also get a mix of residential and commercial taxes." You've been listening to the Lowell Association for the Blind radio reading. Lowell Association for the Blind would like to thank UMass Lowell's WUML-FM for providing the radio signal that broadcasts 5 days a week. Thank you for listening to the Lowell Association for the Blind radio, and you may request a free specialized radio receiver. Or for more information about our radio reading service, call Lowell Association for the Blind at 978-454-5704. You can listen to Lowell Association for the Blind radio anytime by dialing 631-359-9069. And you may visit our website, where you can tune in to Lowell Association for the Blind radio at lowellassociationfortheblind.org. This has been Leslie. Thank you for listening, and enjoy your day.